Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, yeah, it's Monday. I guess I should have taken the day off, but there's too much to talk about. I hope that you're one of the workers in America who's listening to the Savage Nation. We know that the storms have done more to shrink the federal workforce than the Tea Party ever dreamed of, symbol shot. I mean, when you think about it, everything that the Tea Party had dreamed of doing with regard to shrinking the federal government, but they didn't achieve in doing, the storms have done. Apparently, there's a tremendous lack of federal workers right now. They've all been given a time off for the storms. And as you notice, life goes on without them. So we don't know what they actually do, but we know that they earn much more than the private sector. That's for sure. You see the headline today on the Drudge Report, record numbers of Americans on disability, more than the entire population of New York City, over 8 million people. Workers on federal disability. 8.7 million people took federal disability insurance payments in June of 2012. Now you say, well, that's because there's unemployment, but disability is not supposed to be an unemployment check. In fact, under Barack Obama, when he was inaugurated, there was one person per 19 workers taking disability payments. One per 19. And now apparently it's still pretty high. Back in 1992, in the dark ages, there was one person taking disability payments for each 35.5 people working. So what does that mean? It means there are a lot of shyster doctors out there willing to write a disability form saying that you can't work. That's all it means. And if you're 18 to 24 and you want to qualify for disability payments, all you need to have earned was $6,780 over the 3 years before you became so-called disabled. Crazy. Everyone's got a scam. Speaking of scams, we've got to turn to Justice Roberts, who's the greatest scam artist in American history. I'm the only one in the media to have told you that the reason he turned coat like this was probably for two reasons only, one of two reasons only. One, he was blackmailed by someone, or two, he was responding to the medication he was on, which affected his judgment or his comprehension of things. The more I think about it, the more I realize that the Roberts precedent, so-called, is total baloney. In fact, what shocks me the most is that everyone's quoting the Roberts precedent as something important. And no one seems to mention the Schechter Brothers case from 1939, which I talked about on the show for 2 years now from my book, Trickle Up Poverty. I have to ask you, why do you think that the Supreme Court case, the Schechter Brothers case from 1939, where small, lowly butcher stood up to Roosevelt, the central government guy, and they won, and Justice Brandeis, one of the greatest legal minds of all modern times, let's say, said to Roosevelt's aide, let this be the end of centralization of everything. Why do you suppose neither Limbaugh nor any of the other lights of the conservative side have ever mentioned the Schechter Brothers case? There's only one reason. It's because their hatred and fear of Michael Savage is so great that they couldn't even mention a case that would have done the conservative movement good, which shows you that at the end of the day, it's all self-interest. It shows you that the conservative facade of Limbaugh et al., the conservative facade of those who pose as conservatives, is simply a business decision. Because if they really wanted their conservative ideals to be promulgated, They wouldn't care if it was Savage who rediscovered the Schechter case. They would have said more power to him. But we have to quote it to stop this Obamacare from passing. You understand nothing. No one's out there. All right, what can you do? So, therefore, I figured today everyone's on vacation. Federal workers are hiding today, cutting logs out of the fallen trees. And the where is everybody? The roads are empty in California. There's nobody here. Where did everyone go? Best weather of my life. You're sweltering on the East Coast, Midwest. And I have to tell you, I feel superior. I feel the same way New Yorkers used to feel about the world. See, when I was a little kid, New Yorkers had this arrogance that they were the center of the universe and that everyone else was a rube. But as I've gotten older, I've come to understand that there are other places on Earth that have certain things that are going for them, so to speak. And here in the San Francisco area, we have the greatest weather on the planet, which is the only reason I put up with the psychosis of the Bay Area. And speaking of the psychosis of the Bay Area, there's a shocking case out here that's being brushed up, covered up, put aside, and that is this. The San Francisco DA, perhaps the worst district attorney in the history of the American world, has yet to file charges against 66-year-old Larry Brinken, who was arrested last week on suspicion of possessing child pornography. They will not file charges. Now, this guy, Larry Brinken, was a big shot in the Human Rights Commission. He was a big shot in the gay community. He was a well-respected member of the gay and immigrant communities. He spoke their language. In fact, the Board of Supervisors even declared the first week of February as their Larry Brinken week. And so his arrest shocked the San Francisco community, as if there's such a thing called a community. There's several hundred radical psychotic agitators that they call a community. But my community doesn't exist. My community of working family people doesn't exist. But their community was shocked. But the question is, why is Larry Brinken, why is he still walking the streets? Can I ask you something? If a conservative was found with child pornography on their computer, do you think that they would still be walking the streets 10 days later? My producer called the DA's office today, and again we heard the party line from the Communist Central Office, which is that they're still examining the computers, there's no timeline for indictment, and they've been stalling for 10 straight days. The FBI is non-existent on this case. 1-800-449-8255. Don't call the phone number about that. Instead, what I want to do is talk about spanking. Because I believe that children certainly are being raised too soft. I myself was not spanked. My father never, ever hit me in his entire life. So far as I... Never. I was raised in a rough way, but it was verbal, mental. He kept me in line verbally and mentally, but he never spanked me. But there's an article out today from a child psychiatrist which says spanking ups risk of mental disorders, which I don't agree with, incidentally. And they ask the question, which was just published, which is, as a child, how often were you ever pushed, grabbed, shoved, slapped, or hit by your parents or any adult living in your house? Spanking or physical punishment for disciplinary purposes is often described as controversial. Yet some ethnic groups and some people from the old school believe sparing the rod could lead to spoiling the child. Do you know that some ethnic groups actually pride themselves on spanking and hitting their child? Did you know that physical punishment, now this is according to this article, don't blame me, physical punishment is more culturally acceptable in some African, Middle Eastern, and Asian households. And in some Asian schools in particular, corporal punishment has been described to be deeply ingrained in Confucian culture. Compared with being white, black individuals had increased odds of harsh physical punishment, whereas Asian, Native Hawaiian, and other Pacific Islander respondents had decreased odds of experiencing harsh physical punishment. So they say that there's a greater risk of developing mental health problems in the absence of child maltreatment. But if you got spanked, you're liable to be physically hurt by it. I certainly take my hat off to those who discipline their children without hitting them. I'm not so sure that anger is the answer, though. I don't see how you can be a parent without getting angry at some point. Well, there's no question that children today are soft and coddled and could certainly benefit from tougher parenting. But getting tougher or disciplined doesn't need to include getting spanked or paddled, in my opinion. I didn't get hit by my father, even though he was from the old world. I got verbally tongue-lashed constantly, and I can't say that I enjoyed it. In fact, I hated it. In fact, I still have scars from it to this day, but so what? So what? Look at African cultures in Africa. Look at the boys who have physical scars in their bodies from various rituals they had to go through in order to prove they were a man. So in my case, my father gave me mental scars for me to become a tough man. People would say he was overly harsh. It's hard to say. I didn't raise my children that way, although I'm sure I missed the mark from their point of view. So I'm going to ask you a question, since you don't want to talk about Roberts the lunatic turncoat. Roberts is the equivalent of someone fighting with the Americans against the British, who at the very last minute threw off the American coat and put on a British red coat and ran over to the other side. Plain and simple, Justice Roberts is a sellout, period. Now, for guys like George Will, who holds himself up to be some intellectual, or Krauthammer, another fraud, another lifetime Democrat. Krauthammer is a lifetime Democrat who poses as a conservative and postures on Fox News. Another one who got it all wrong, saying that Roberts is a genius. They're both schmendricks, both wrong, both weak-willed, and don't understand what actually just happened to them. But I'd rather talk about spanking. Because, frankly, I'm going to ask you, were you spanked or disciplined harshly as a child? I did this type of show once before in my history, 18 years in radio. About 3-4 years ago I did it. I could not believe the calls I got. But for a show like today, July 2nd, leading up to yet another holiday, I don't know how many holidays people need. I don't know where the productivity went. Why do they have to announce? Okay, July 4th is Wednesday, I understand. A sane federal government says that it's celebrated on Monday, July 2nd, and makes it a 3-day weekend. An insane liberal government lets people take off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know how many people are off this week? Forget about the storms that wiped out the federal workforce. People are just taking 5-day weekends now. Where's the recession, I'd like to know? How do people afford 5-day work weekends? I don't have a 5-day weekend. Why didn't I take one? Because I knew that millions of you would be hanging on, just dying for the show till it came around. 3 o'clock West Coast, 6 o'clock East Coast, etc. Because you count on me. Without me, you'd go crazy. I'm the only thing that keeps you from self-immolating. That's why I'm Michael Savage, the most unique man in the history of talk radio. When I come back, I'm going to take your calls on the topics I've raised. There's about 3 or 4 of them. Roberts being a turncoat. Why has Larry Brinker not been indicted, even though he was found with child porn, according to the LAPD and SFPD? Who is protecting him and why? The spanking story, and then I will read to you an anonymous email I got from a brilliant First Amendment attorney who will not be mentioned, who compares me to the greatest minds in the history of comedy, who says that I am the equivalent today of Lenny Bruce in my own way. People don't understand me. I'm a misunderstood genius, and he's someone who's been around a long time who will remain anonymous. I'll be right back.
Savage.
A long maudlin weekend basically by myself. I don't know what's, but anyway, I'll go back to the show in a minute. I know that you like to hear the inner workings of the brilliant mind that you listen to. I spent a lot of time alone, totally in isolation, me the dog in the bay in the boat, or sometimes just me the dog and the seagulls in the bay. And I happened upon, I don't know, just schmaltzy July 4th stuff over the weekend. I think it was selling like an Elvis Presley tape or something. But there he was in one of his last performances singing My Way, and it really touched me. I don't know why, it just touched me, because I was never a big Elvis fan, but there he was, puffy, you know, from the abuse and the drugs, and it was sad to watch this guy. But when he sang My Way, there was something, he struck a chord with me, that's all. And I envisioned with my upcoming live performance, I know it's crazy, like what am I going to do? I'm thinking about it a lot now. What I'm thinking of singing My Way on karaoke at the end of the show to bring the audience. I'm not going to do it. You know, like, see, you have to think things through, live with them for a while, and reject them. I don't have an Elvis costume, number one. It's too expensive to make. It wouldn't fit me. But I'll tell you, I was reading some of the stories. I edited, finally, thank God, it went off today back to the publisher. 200 comments in my Train Tracks book of corrections, and it went back, my childhood stories and this and that. And I realized that just me going on that stage and doing a little live and then reading from that book some of the, my childhood stories telling him would be enough of a show. I would go to it. So we'll go back now to the childhood of you, discipline. The argument is that push, grab, shove, slapped, or hit by your parents will often screw up a child. And I agree. I think it's horrible. I don't like seeing a kid hit. On the other hand, there are people who believe in corporal punishment, particularly from Asian, Middle Eastern households, African, some Asian schools, in fact, they use corporal punishment. Caning is an official form of school discipline in Singapore. And, we don't understand that children cannot be let to do everything they want to do. Doesn't mean you hit them, but you have to control them. Children are fundamentally like wild animals, and they need, don't you? You don't know that? I mean, that's the first thing you do is teach a child, not to mess the floor, go to the potty. It's called potty training. Liberals, you'd have trouble with potty training. They think that they're damaging the child by telling him not to do it in the road. And now look around the society. These are undisciplined, millions of undisciplined children running around with iPhones. All they want to do is have sex, drugs, and rock and roll, day and night. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. They think that explains the reason for human evolution. So what I'm saying is, where is the discipline? How are you disciplined? And it's a great topic. And we're talking about the undisciplined opinion of Justice Roberts, how like a spoiled, traitorous child, he turned on the conservative people of the United States of America, who counted on him to stop the socialized medicine juggernaut. Unfortunately, he turned code on us and stabbed us all in the back, and now he is loved, revered, lionized, and otherwise held up as a role model for every other conservative who has finally seen the light, which is to go communist and introduce as quickly as possible a Castro-like government in the United States of America. I'm convinced Robert would take your guns away from you, given the chance for more accolades. See, talk radio is not karaoke. I'm not playing someone else's script and singing over it. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. It's a very interesting point I just made. I mean, we're mixing in the conversation about discipline, Roberts being a turncoat, and I bring up the discipline thing. And then I think about this medium I'm in. It's an amazing medium, talk radio, where I'm not living on a script, right? It's live performance. I'm sharp and I'm edgy. Every single moment of every show has to keep you listening, right? And so a great First Amendment attorney sent me a note saying, Savage, even though I'm a liberal, I compare you to Lenny Bruce in terms of combining social issues and performance. And he said, Michael, remember during Lenny Bruce's lifetime, he was under attack for his views and his manner of expressing his views. And most of the attacks against Lenny Bruce came from the political right, while you're often attacked for your views and for your manner of expressing your views from a different side of the political spectrum. And he says, as a First Amendment attorney, I have to tell you that your speech and performance is protected whether or not I agree with you. In fact, I disagree with most of what you say, but it's irrelevant to my belief that you have a First Amendment right to hold and express your views. So that's from one of the top First Amendment attorneys who's a diehard red diaper dopamine liberal, by the way. You see what I'm saying? So it's a very interesting thing to be a shock jock who doesn't have the intelligence of George Will or Krauthammer or Dan Rather or Anderson Cooper. I mean, those are experienced journalists. I mean, a guy like Anderson Cooper. Look at a man like that. Look at the brains, the education. His ratings don't reflect his true genius. I mean, if Aristotle had a television show today, he'd have low ratings too. That's why he has low ratings, because he's so brilliant. So he has to pull out the final card today now that his ratings are in the toilet. He's about to be fired. He has to pull out about his personal life. That's to make him more interesting. He announces a thing like that. Suddenly, I'm interested in Anderson Cooper. The guy's a schmendrick. He has nothing to say. He's dumb. He's dumb. I don't care what his sexual orientation is. He's a dummy. Give me an ugly, bald guy who's gay or not gay. I'll listen to him. What does it matter that he's cute and he wears tight jeans and he got excited about the dumb guy? Just a dummy. That's why he has low ratings. People are not that dumb. necessarily, comma, all the time, Mencken. So what do you want to talk about? You want to talk about discipline? Weak, 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 weak. His statements are weak. They're mush. No thought, no mental discipline. My father used to yell at me if I didn't tell the truth about something. He would say to me, he would demand the truth. Now, I can't say I'm truthful to everybody. I would be lying to you if I said that. Who's truthful to everybody? What, are you an idiot? You know? But I'm saying to you, by and large, he made me answer him, and he made me answer as truthfully as I knew. He would say, no, not that. I want the answer. Or he'd make me, if I'd ask him a question, he'd say to me, you figure it out. I don't know how to figure it out. I couldn't think. I didn't know how to think as a kid. Children don't know how to think. Don't you understand that? They're like emotional creatures. He taught me how to think. He would show me A to B to C to D. He taught me Aristotelian logic. He was not a college-educated man, but he was smart. So, smart guy. So he taught me how to think. That's the greatest gift you can give a child. And unfortunately, you have tens of millions of people in America who cannot think. They are taught not to think in school. They are taught to regurgitate the party line. So how will you discipline? Who is the most disciplined caller on the show today? Who got disciplined the worst? Anyone up there? Huh? Frank in New York, WOR. Go ahead. You'll lead the parade. How were you disciplined?
Dr. Savage, I'd like to tell you a story, give you the background of my life that highlights...
All right, so hold on. It's already too much. You have no discipline. Come on, Frank. Cut it short.
My father disciplined us when we were kids.
But how?
Harshly.
How?
Well, he hit us with the belt.
Belt?
He hit us with the belt, with the hand, but...
Wait, hold on. I'm not going to make... Now, I want to ask you something, and it's not meant to deride your ethnic group. Are you Italian?
Very Italian, yes, sir.
Because for some reason, Italians of that generation were into the belt.
But can I tell you the integrity of my father, though?
Sure.
When I was very young and I didn't understand him, he said to me, he said, Frank, I realized that what I'm doing in anger and not in love. I didn't understand what the hell that meant. So he said, I swear to God, I'm never going to hit you again. But he was still a very angry man. Now,
I don't understand. Did he stop hitting you after that, or he kept hitting you anyway?
No, he stopped hitting me because he realized that he was doing it while he was losing his temper and not doing it in a composed manner for my own. All right, let's say...
The bottom line is this. You were beaten with a belt and it made you a better person. What did your mother say? What did your mother say when he said, I'm going to belt you one?
Well, my mother was crazy, too, so she sort of enjoyed it.
oh, come on. What, she joined in? She hit you with a mortadella?
My mother used to beat me with a soap dish. She used to chase me through the house.
Oh, a mild beating. That was very compassionate, very maternal of her.
Well,
very maternalistic. You had a hell of an upbringing. What did you become? Are you an enforcer for one of the Gambino? I mean, what do you do in New York?
Well, I'm a landlord who owns property. I also have a full time job.
Yeah, I can just imagine. Frank, come on, seriously. But you didn't raise your children with a belt, did you?
No. I'm trying to get to the part of the story where it highlights the necessity between me and my brothers and my sisters. I went to live with my father when I was 15 years old because of differences with my mother. Now, my brother and my sister stayed with my mother.
Uh-huh.
Now, this also highlights the horror of divorce. Because
right.
My mother and my father had such bad blood between them. And
right.
My mother didn't want to, quote-unquote, lose another child to my father. She stopped disciplining at all. Whatever these kids wanted, they got. No matter what they did.
And how did they wind up, the undisciplined siblings?
My brother sits at home smoking pot all day. My sister can't get along with any man, and she's living right probably next to you somewhere in San Francisco.
I can just imagine. I think she just cut me off on a highway here.
It's probably true.
I had a bigger, faster car. I mean, it was shocking. It was like your sister, that type. She had a vendetta to pass me, crazy, coming down Bay Street, where no one passes. She hated me because I had a bigger, faster, more beautiful car. One of those. She went in the opposite lane to try and cut me off. I wouldn't let her.
Good, good. She needs.
No, that's what the V12 is for. I'm not going to let her cut me off. So I sped up. She got stuck out there. Then she speeds around me on the right lane and then disappears and makes a sharp right to get away. You know what a lot of people who do that on the highway, road rage, you know what they do, Frank? This is a little off the topic. Have you ever noticed they realize they were crazy and then they jut away, realizing that they were just nuts?
And they won't make eye contact with you.
No, it was shocking. I looked in the mirror. There was like a crazy woman barreling down in a Honda. If she was in a Prius with an Obama sticker, I could understand it. It wasn't even a Prius with an Obama sticker. It was a lunatic, probably worked for the city, probably the DA herself. Frank, thanks for the call. I have no idea what the point was, but I appreciate it. Well, he was disciplined, and he turned out well. His siblings were not disciplined with a stick or a belt in their potheads. Okay, that's good. Look, let's not lose sight of the story. It appeared in the local newspaper today. Spanking ups risk of mental disorders. Now, I never spanked my children, but they did a study. As a child, how often would you ever push, grab, shove, slapped, or hit by your parents or any adult living in your house? Here it's called child abuse. But in certain households, particularly ethnic households of certain kinds, they use physical punishment regularly. For better or for worse, culturally acceptable. Asian, Middle Eastern, African. Corporal punishment described as deeply ingrained in Confucian culture. Caning used in Singapore. So the question is, how do you provide healthy limits and such on children without hurting them? How do you shape their behavior? How do you shape their behavior when they're running around with an iPhone and they're all id, to use a Freudian phrase that is lost on the masses today? The child today has no superego. It's all id. It's impulse. If it feels good, do it. All they want to do is get stoned or drunk and have sex. You say not a bad idea, but it's not a joke. That's why we have so many tens of millions of people who are ignoramuses. They come out of college. College. I went to college. They can't add. They cannot write cursively. They can't do anything, and yet they get mad when they take their first job because it's a lowly job. It's all they're fit for. And so, therefore, it's all based upon the fact that we have a permissive culture. As you know, China is still a very, very highly disciplined society, and look how well they're doing. Take a look at what we're teaching our children today. A local high school in Marin County just spent millions of dollars not to build a new computer lab, not to build the most advanced science laboratories, but to build a theater so more of the jerks could put on tights and be thespians. That gives you some idea of the mental thinking here in the San Francisco Bay Area, that the child should be an actor, run around in tights. Nothing wrong with being an actor, but a society can only use so many actors, right? There's only so many actors that you can use. Where are we supposed to get all of the trained, technically advanced, scientifically knowledgeable individuals? I guess we can bring them in from India and China and give them B-1B visas. Huh? Is that what you want? A nation of imbeciles. So is discipline related to imbecility, or a lack of discipline related to imbecility? That is the question. It really turns around on that question. Is discipline related to social imbecility, or the lack of discipline related to social imbecility? That is the question. You know, it's interesting. Spare the rod and spoil the child. I never used the rod because I didn't want to traumatize my children. They don't like me anyway. So you see, you can't win anyway. They still have. Here's the thing you got to understand as a parent: no matter what you do, they're not going to like you. Simple shot. It's a simple theorem. No matter how you raise the child, at least one out of two is not going to like you. If you're lucky, it's one out of two. They'll say you were this, you were that, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, you looked at me the wrong way, you weren't there at the soccer game, and I needed you at that particular second. You may have been in the hospital, but they only see that you weren't at the soccer game because they think you're God, you're all-knowing, and that you should be able to, you know, take care of their every emotional need. That's the way it is. Parents are gods to children, and as gods, we fail them. Just as God fails us, I know now we're shifting into the theology, just as God fails man, because man wants more from God than he's able to give each of us, parents will fail children. So you can't take it personally. You have to understand that you're not going to be a perfect parent, and the parent who tries too hard to be the child's friend is really not doing that child a favor. I don't say be their enemy, but you know, you got to be a parent. I don't go for the man running around with the shorts and the ball 24/7 where he's his son's best friend. The son needs a father. He has friends from school. Try not to be his best friend. Try to be his father. That's harder. It's much harder to be his father than it is to be his best friend. And that's why so many men today think that just playing ball with the kid is enough. I'm not saying it's bad. It's a nice thing to do. But then they need you to discipline them. The homework, whatever, okay? It's a hard job. The hardest job on earth being a father. The second hardest job, well, I would say it's as hard as being a mother. I don't know. The mother has it much harder. I think the mother today has it much harder than the father. Traditionally, it's been true anyway. The women bear more pain than men do. You gotta have pity for women. I know they don't want to hear it, but truthfully, the woman bears so much pain. And all you got to do is look at the biology of it. I mean, giving birth has to be one of the most painful experiences a human being can go through. And yet women do it. Women can handle it. Men could probably not handle that level of pain. Women are actually made to bear that pain, would you believe it or not. Men couldn't handle it. It's a different sort of thing that men are made to bear than that type of physical pain. And so women are by inherent nature, they're stronger than men, which is why they outlive us. Women, the weaker sex, the kinder sex. It's not true. The women are tougher. Biologically, they're tougher because they have to bear children. And to bear a child requires tremendous physical strength. And that physical strength carries over into older age. Now, you know, this is all collateral stuff. I've gotten off the track from the discipline. That's because it's Monday and no one's listening. Even though the boards are jammed, there's like 12 people listening today. Everyone's on vacation. Federal workers are all gone. As I say, the tree's falling down. Did more to shrink the workforce than Romney could ever do. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yeah, it's a great topic, this whole thing of how to discipline a child. I mean, they say, yeah, you discipline them, they get mentally ill. You know, how about if you don't discipline them and they just run amok? Look what they wind up. Look how they wind up. So it's the balance. Who knows what the balance is, particularly a societal and this and that, you know. Hey, Mike, I discipline my kids pretty good. They all turn out good, Mike. One just graduated Corcoran after a 10-year stint. Oh, yeah, the other ones in San Quentin will be getting out soon. Yeah, they all turn out good, Mike. Yeah, real men. Cat lady's more likely to commit suicide, scientists claim. This is a weird story out of the Telegraph of London from the Journal of Psychiatry. Women who own cats are more likely to have mental health problems and commit suicide because they can be infected by a common parasite that can be caught from cat litter. Ugh, I hate cats. I mean, they're pretty looking, and I know I'm stepping on... I don't like houses with cats in them. I'm allergic to cats. Researchers found women affected with the Toxoplasma gondii parasite, T. gondii. So if you read it, it's G-O-N-D-I-I. The Latin is gondii. It's from my botanical Latin days. It's spread through contact with cat faeces, or eating undercooked meat or unwashed vegetables. So girls, if you're eating raw around cat litter boxes. Study involved more than 45,000 women in Denmark. About a third of the world's population is infected with the parasite, which hides in cells in the brain and muscles. The infection, which is called toxoplasmosis, has been linked to mental illness such as schizophrenia and changes in behavior. And they quote the study, association between the infection and suicide attempts later in life that warrant additional studies. So, obviously, you don't want to be around cat litter. And this whole idea of eating raw is insane, by the way. Madness. Humans can become infected by changing their infected cat's litter boxes, eating unwashed vegetables, drinking water from a contaminated source, or more commonly by eating undercooked or raw meat that is infested with cysts. Ugh. See, I'm not into that raw meat thing. Not washing kitchen knives after preparing raw meat before handling another food item can also lead to infection, girls. Pregnant women can pass the parasite directly to their unborn babies and advise not to change cat litter boxes to avoid possible infection. My recommendation is if you have babies, don't have cats, by the way. Animals are dirty to begin with. You take a dog out, Mr. Fluffy. Oh, he's cute, he's beautiful, he's wonderful. You take him out, you know what he's licking? You have any idea what he's doing with that mouth of his? Oh, look at me. Look how cute. Then you take him in the bed with you after he stuck his nose in the most disgusting thing on the earth. I mean, the Muslims are not wrong in some ways, you know. And they're filthy animals. So, I mean, when I take my little guy out, even after a bath, the first thing he does is ruin the bath. Makes himself a horror. 2 minutes, he's dirty again. Rubs in bushes. He gets excited. He goes against the bush. He can't just relieve himself. He's got to rub in the bush. I got to take him back and wash him again. It's horrible. I don't know what to do with him. I can't discipline him. He wouldn't understand it. You know, they're limited in how you can discipline the guys. I wash his nose when I come in. Like, I take kitchen paper. I know it's crazy with, like, warm water. And I talk to him. I said, look, you're dirty. You're a dog. You can't help it. All right. I can't help it. I'm a dog. That's what I do. What do you want from me? I'm not a man. I go out. I lick it. That's right. That's what I do. Leave me alone. Take the paper. Rub my mouth and leave me alone. I rub the mouth, the feet, the schmendrick, and then, all right, now you're clean. Yeah, I'm clean. What do you know? He says to me with his eyes. I'm not clean. All you did was rub it around, idiot. You could have left me alone. Teddy and I have these imaginary mental conversations. Austin, Texas. Andy, we have almost no time. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, I was disciplined both ways, with the belt and also verbally. And I found the verbal one stuck with me a lot longer.
I agree. I think verbal abuse is worse than the belt. I think truthfully, the verbal abuse and mental games on a child can really hurt them more than hitting them.
I agree, because as I was going to say, I was told I was good for two things. One, we'll say, is manure, or what Teddy rubbed
yeah.
his nose in, and the other was nothing.
Right, you were good for nothing. I get it. And did you work out okay? Calling from Corcoran on the quarter. They gave him a cue.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome back to Savage Nation. All things considered here on the Savage Nation, politics, education, science, health, celebrities, news, sports, especially boxing, culture, travel, lifestyle, fashion, everything is fair game. So I've been talking about spanking. Spanking ups risk of mental disorders, according to a study. Spanking ups risk of mental disorders. And then we talk about how to discipline children. I asked you how you were disciplined as a child because it's a cultural thing. Certain cultures actually believe in harsh physical punishment. As a matter of fact, corporal punishment has been described to deeply ingrained in Confucian culture. And caning is still an official form of school discipline in Singapore. Yet in America, you'd be arrested for child abuse if you disciplined your child in that manner. And so how do you raise a child is an issue. Were you disciplined? Then I read you a story from the Journal of Psychiatry in the Telegraph's Cat Lady's More Likely to Commit Suicide, Scientists Claim. That's from a common parasite caught from cat litter or from raw meat or raw foods. And I got to tell you, there's a trend in these pretentious restaurants to undercook foods today, which is ludicrous. Who started this is anyone's guess. It's part of this San Francisco snob culture that makes no sense whatsoever. I'm trained as an anthropologist as well as a botanist, okay? And one of the early studies, books or essays written on the subject was called The Raw and the Cook by Claude Lévi-Strauss, one of the great anthropologists of the last century. Claude Lévi-Strauss wrote that book, The Raw and the Cook, and he defined civilization as beginning when man learned to cook food, which is not to say that all raw foods are to be ignored or avoided, But you must understand that there's a limit to raw foods. And this whole trend of undercooking fish. I won't eat fish that's pink. More than likely, the fish contains microscopic parasites. It must be cooked all the way through. I do not eat steak tartare. You got to be insane to eat raw meat. Look what it did to France. So this whole idea of raw foods, raw enzyme, they don't even know what an enzyme is. The same people who tell you that gluten, I'm on a gluten-free diet, but they don't know what gluten is. They know it's bad for you. They know that global warming is caused by something or other that's bad. Evil Republicans cause global warming. Gluten causes them to be disturbed and fat. And cooking food ruins it. Yeah, got to be like an animal, like a lion, just eat raw food. They don't know what they're talking about. It's ignorance and pretentiousness and stupidity. So be careful. I mean, you got to understand that there's neuroimmunology involved in this. Suicide is a critically important mental health issue, and it may be related to parasites in some cases. In this case, it's the parasite called T. gondii. T. gondii. You don't want to get it. You don't want to change cat litter. You don't want to have babies around cat litter. And that's common sense. I myself am a dog person. I never liked cats. Doesn't mean that I'm right or wrong, but I don't like them around. I wouldn't have them around my kids when they were babies. I remember there were studies even then that showed not a causal link, but a, let's say, a weak putative link between cats and childhood leukemia. And I became real skittish about it, and I wouldn't let my children be around cats. Now, whether there was any truth to it is irrelevant. What's relevant is that the cat litter boxes are disgusting to have in a house. They're disgusting. And every time you bend over to clean one of those things, you're taking a chance of losing your marbles. Now, it's true that dogs also carry communicable diseases, but there's hardly an article about that. But, yeah, all right. But the difference is dog feces are not kept in the house like a cat's are. Okay? Let's be clear here. Dog is overt. Cat is covert. That's how I define it. I like a dog because there it is. He lifts his leg. It's over with. Cat's always hiding. Cat always hides their waist. Dog is right out there. I don't like, go right out, drop, and that's it. Go out with the dog, bingo. Cat always like looks at you, like sneaks away and does its thing. But look, if you lived in 1492 and you had a barn full of grain without which your family would have died, certainly you had cats around to keep the rats down. But what do you need one for now? What do you need a cat in the house for? I'm not going to get cat callers. Now, that's not the point. I'm trying to warn you. The findings are published in the online in the Archives of General Psychiatry. T. gondii. Raw vegetables, insane. Humans can become infected by changing their infected cat's litter boxes, eating unwashed vegetables, drinking water, blah, blah, eating undercooked or raw meat, or not washing kitchen knives. My mother was fanatic. Every time she used an implement in the kitchen, it was like drenched in boiling water. She was right. Pregnant women can pass the parasite directly to their unborn babies and are advised not to change cat litter boxes to avoid possible infection. All right, we've covered that. Now let's move on to the Honda trying to cut me off in my V12 Mercedes. Well, what was she thinking? I mean, what was that crazed liberal thinking? I didn't do anything to bother her. I wasn't racing with her. I was on Bay Street coming to the radio station, minding my business, and she had a vendetta to pass me on. It didn't matter, right, left. She just wanted to prove that her little Honda was better than my big monster, you know, Wilhelm. I call him Wilhelm. I gave him a name. Wilhelm is now 4 years old. He's getting old. No matter how you try, you get like, I have a ding neurosis for my cars. Remember I told you about ding neurosis? I defined it. I'm like the guy who like parks his car on the other side of the parking lot, under a tree. Nevertheless, there are people who find you and ding you, no matter what you do. There's like invisible dings appear on my car. I don't know where they come from because I never park parallel next to anyone. My dream is to pull into like a parking lot and find a parallel spot under a tree. That's nirvana. That's as close to nirvana as I'm going to find. Parallel spots under a tree. Unbelievable. But then you always have the fear that some yokel with a pickup truck with a... You ever see the yokels with the pickup trucks, the big ones on the raised wheels, the guys who have absolutely no sense of manhood? They need a truck with the raised wheels with a trailer hook on the back of it. because they could back into you and smash in your grill and pull away. You'd have no evidence. There's no paint on the trailer hook. That's your worst fear, is you're going to park parallel and some yokel with one of those pickup trucks are going to bash your grill in just because you have a nicer car. So yeah, you can. But you get the nicks. You get the dings, the thing that rose, no matter what you do. But nevertheless, I wasn't bothering anybody. I'm driving, and she wants to pass. It's not like I wouldn't let her pass. It was crazy. Bay Street is a very narrow two-lane road. Sometimes cars coming out. You can't really pass. And everyone gets nervous. Someone's going to turn left to Fisherman's Wharf. So they try to, like, lap you on the right side. It's like Indianapolis 500. I wouldn't let her pass me. It was dangerous. So she went around me on the left in oncoming traffic. Almost killed both of us. Right? Crazy woman. Mad woman. What am I going to say? Do I know who she was? No. She knew me? No. Okay. Make a generalization about her? Yes. Absolutely. If she was in a Prius with an Obama sticker, yes. But no, she was in a Honda. Honda's like old, so old-fashioned. Honda's like not even eating raw. I mean, the Prius is like eating, you know, raw and showing everyone how cool you are. But this whole raw food, undercooked food, is very much like people who bandy about certain dietary restrictions for their religious beliefs. This, oh, no, I don't touch that stuff. No, that's okay if you eat that garbage. That's fine. Eat it around me. No, it's fine. But we're always saying you're an animal. No, I eat the shrimp. I don't care. No, I eat the garbage. Eat the treif. No, I don't touch the garbage myself. No, you can eat it on me. No, I just won't touch a thing in your house. Nothing. No, nothing. A special cooking. No, don't. No, you're perfectly fine. Don't take it the wrong way. I just won't touch it. That's all. Would you like a glass of water? No, unless you have a paper cup. Yeah. You have a paper cup? Maybe I'll have a water. A bottle of water, maybe. You have a bottle of water? Have you a bottle of water? I love people who come to your house, you offer them something, they won't touch it. I don't like people like that. I don't trust them. I don't like people who come to the house and say, would you like something? Not even a bottle. How about a beer? Soda? No. Juice? No. A bottle of water? No. No, no, no. Would it have like a disease? What do you mean you don't even want a bottle of water? That's so rude. Is that rude or am I wrong? I once had a friend. I dropped him. He came to one of my parties 100 years ago, I don't know, 20 years ago, and he wouldn't, he ate the food, but he brought his own water, a bottle of water, here in a restaurant, like they didn't have bottled water. He was so special, he needed bottled water. Watch out for people with, like, super allergies, they're allergic to everything. A lot of them are using it as rackets to, like, get over on people. Yes, that's correct. And I'm someone, by the way, who suffers from, I don't like perfume, I don't like scents of any kind, I don't beat people up with it, I avoid them. That's all. The dog I like, he smells good. Generally, I'm allergic to people at this stage of my life. There's always something with some person, something about that person that bothers me. An off smell, an off sound, a breath I could faint from. Have you noticed that as you get older? Is that why people withdraw as they get older? There's something about everything about somebody, the way a tooth looks, you don't like it. Just something, you're talking to them, and things that you never noticed as a younger person, like the way their teeth are shaped, can bother you and set you. Because certainly like people's teeth can set you off, like the way one is too sharp, and you start getting like atavistic fears of the individual. Or let's say their fingernails are dirty, you don't trust them after that. There's certain things where they wear like a dirty tennis sneaker, you don't want to be around them. Let's not get too personal here, but that's why I can't go on a cruise ship. There's one leaving right now as I'm speaking here in San Francisco. I am changing. I used to look with such want. There's the white ship backing out of the harbor. The tugs are pushing it, going, There are the thousands of Eddies and Edettes standing with their cocktail in hand looking over the side of the ship. As San Francisco fades into the background, they go under the Golden Gate Bridge. And then what? Then what? 7 days of what? I don't understand it. I really don't know. When I was young, yeah, but I went on ships when they were not cruise lines. They were passenger liners. Nothing wrong with it. What are you going on a ship for? You have to climb a wall. Can anyone explain that to me? They build a ship today. I'm astounded. What they build, the engineering is amazing. You're going on a ship to climb a rock wall? Why don't you stay home and climb a rock wall in a sporting goods store? You're going on a ship to see the sea. What do you have to climb a rock wall? Or they build a ship with an ice skating rink on it. You ever hear anything like this? Why are you going on a ship? I don't understand it. I went on ships because I love the ocean, I love the water, the motion of the sea. Yes, it made me a superior person. Yes, it did. Yeah, absolutely made me a superior traveler, superior person, more intelligent than the people today. No question about it. this whole concept of rock climbing and ice skating on a cruise liner, I don't understand what they're going for. Stay home and go. Go to an ice skating rink. But to each his own. It's a big world, 6 billion people or whatever. And look how many voted for Obama. Take a look at the intelligence level. I had to throw that in just so you knew. Just so you didn't lose track of what show you were listening to. And we were talking about Obama. Where is he? He's on vacation now. He's playing some miniature golf somewhere. Chinese stink bugs ruining U.S. fruit crops. Google bans weapons from shopping listings. Obama vowed health care wouldn't impose middle class tax. You mean Obama lied? No, that's not possible. He's the saint. 3/4 of Obamacare tax costs will fall on people making less than $120,000 a year. That's you. The lower level worker is going to pay 3/4 of communist care. You didn't know that. You thought it was going to get the rich? Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, you really went for that one. Lots of stories on my website, other websites. You can turn to anyone you want. Don't need to plug anything. Texas student mauled by chimps. Horrible story. God, this kid was a nice kid. They dragged him a kilometer? Vicious. Vicious. I never liked chimpanzees. I told you the story last week about Louie and the monkey. I don't trust chimps. Gorillas are another story. I love gorillas. I feel bad for the mountain gorilla, the silverback. I personally would like to execute anyone who hurts a gorilla or an elephant. If I could volunteer for a firing squad, I'd shoot poachers who kill elephants or gorillas. But a chimpanzee, look, leave me alone with them. They look crazy. Look, they're very close to us genetically. That explains their insanity and also their violence. A chimp is within what? What percent of our DNA is shared with a chimp? It explains what they're like. I'll be right back.
Savage.
When I was 1 and 20, I heard a wise man say, give crowns and pounds and guineas, but give not your heart away. Hey, Mario, what did you say about us? See, that's why I can't get highbrow here. If I read a poem like that from A.E. Housman, someone thinks it's an ethnic slur. When I was 1 and 20, I heard a wise man say, give crowns and pounds and guineas, but give not your heart away. Give pearls away and rubies, but keep your fancy free. But when I was 1 and 20, no use to talk to me. Hey, no one even knows who A. Housman is. But that's an important part of my background because he had a sense of mortality. And we all do. Anyway, forget about it. I just brought it up. What do you want to talk about? I've already, what were the topics? Play My Way. We only have a minute 43. And now the end is near. And so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear.
The final curtain.
Make it louder so I can sing over it. I'll do karaoke.
My friend,
and I'll say it clear.
I'll state my case.
Of which I'm certain.
I've lived
a life that's full. I traveled each and every highway, and more, much more than this. I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few. But then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do. And saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course. Each careful step along the byway. And much more than this. I did it my way.
Savage.
Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when I bit off more than I could chew. Are we back on the air? I'm playing around here. But through it all, when there was doubt, I ate it up and spit it out. I faced it all, and I stood tall, and did it my way. I love this song. I'm going to sing it. I don't care whether you like it or not. Think I want to talk about Roberts? Come on, more. I've loved and cried. I've had my fill, my share of losing.
My share of losing.
And now, as tears subside,
as tears subside,
I find it all so amusing.
So amusing. To think
I did all that, and may I say, not in a shy way. Oh no, not me, I did it my way.
Not in a shy way.
No, oh no, not me.
Oh no,
not me, I did it my way. Here's the best stanza coming up.
I did it my.
Here's why I'm playing it for you. Listen to this.
For
what is a man? What has he got? If not himself, then he has not. To say the things he truly feels, and not the words of one who kneels. The record shows I took the blows and did it my way. Incredible. Here's my song, played at my funeral, for the Scottish Fife Band. What a song, God. You're not stirred by this, you're a Democrat. Anyway, I heard it the other day, but I heard the Elvis version, and I got moved. I actually felt tears come to my eyes because, you know, certain point, the end is near, the curtain, you don't know, right? You start feeling that. You feel it, like the curtain. You feel the curtain. You say, what's it all about? Well, at the end of the day, what's it all about? Is to try and, walk tall and be straight and not hurt too many people and don't hurt yourself. But by all means, man, don't get on your knees. So far as you can avoid it, don't get on your knees. That's all. Don't get on your knees. Do the best you can. That's all you can do. You're going to meet animals along the way. You're going to meet the worst form of humanity along the way. You're going to meet the lowest vermin on the planet, some posing as religious, some posing as conservatives. You're going to meet the lowest of the low. And I have found in my life the lowest of the low who pose as either conservatives, who are frauds, they'll cut your heart out for a dime, or religious, who'll also cut your heart out for a dime. Let me tell you that. So don't think I suddenly buy the party line. The worst people I ever met in my life were the fake Christians, to be honest with you. The ones that wear it on their sleeve, watch out for them. Okay, the bigger the cross, the bigger the you-know-what. Just watch out for those who wear it on their sleeves. Watch out for those peddling that false Messiah garbage. But I ain't afraid of them. I never have been. Now, what do you want to talk about now that I sang My Way by Elvis Presley? I'm wondering if I shouldn't, when I do the live performance in September, then in Florida, then elsewhere. If it goes over, I'll take it on the road. You know who wrote that? Paul Anka. And set to music based on the French song Comme d'Habitude, composed in 1916 by Claude François and Jacques Revaux, with lyrics by Claude François and Gilles Thibault. Comme d'Habitude had in turn originally been written in English, titled For Me. Anka's English lyrics are unrelated to the original French song or the early English version. My Way is often quoted as the most covered song in history. The lyrics of My Way tell a story of a man who, having grown old, reflects on his life as death approaches. He is comfortable with his mortality and takes responsibility for how he dealt with all the challenges of life while maintaining a respectable degree of integrity. Paul Anka heard the original 1967 French pop song Comme d'Habitude, as usual, performed by Claude François while on a holiday in the south of France. He flew to Paris to negotiate the rights to the song. Incredible. I never knew Anka had that level of creativity in him. He said, I thought it was a bad record, but there was something in it. He acquired publishing rights at no cost except the melody's rights kept by the author. And 2 years later, had a dinner in Florida with Frank Sinatra and a couple of mob guys, at which Sinatra said, I'm quitting the business. I'm sick of it. I'm getting the hell out.
Back in New York, Anka rewrote the original French song for Sinatra, subtly altering the melodic structure and changing lyrics. At 1 o'clock in the morning, I sat down. Well, anyway, it's an amazing song, huh? He said, I used the words and I ate it up and spit it out, but that's the way he talked. I used to be around steam rooms with the Rat Pack guys. They liked to talk like mob guys, even though they would have been scared of their own shadows. Anka finished the song at 5 a.m. I called Frank up in Nevada. He was at Caesar's Palace and said, I've got something really special for you. Anka claimed, when my record company caught wind of it, they were very pissed that I didn't keep it for myself. I said, hey, I can write it. Well, anyway, you can read it for yourself. It's amazing. I didn't know it was Frenchies, my way. I didn't know the French wrote this thing. Why make a French joke? That's amazing. And I didn't know Paul Anka had this in him, truthfully. I would have thought by the lyrics of My Way, it was like some Jewish gambler who was about to be whacked by the mob for not paying a debt. And he got more than a rote money. No, knowing how songwriting went in the 50s. Look, and now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear. I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full. He expects him to come through the door any minute and blast him. Or break his legs with it. I travel each and every highway. This is a beautiful song. Imagine if I come out in an Elvis suit and sing and do a karaoke. That would be a parody of a parody within a parody. It would still be good. Maybe I could buy an Elvis suit like my size on eBay. Like a used Elvis suit. No, but then it would diminish my politics. See, what you have to analyze when you start thinking about these things for live shows. Different than radio. So you do this, then you make a double clown of yourself. Then they don't take your politics, which are sheer genius, seriously. That's how jerks like George Will and Krauthammer, a Democrat. Charles Krauthammer is a Democrat. He always has been. So that's how they get away with it. That's how they get away with this garbage. They're like lightweights. They're mental lightweights. They pass themselves off as very serious conservatives. Okay? And then they come up with some cockamamie lie that Roberts did it because he's such a genius to outmaneuver Obama. I never saw such convoluted reasoning for such a loss in my life. This was the single greatest policy win in Obama's life and the single greatest loss in the history of the conservative movement in modern times. And these schmendricks try to double reason themselves into thinking it was a victory for conservatives. I was right the first time around. Now people are coming around to my way of seeing things. I saw it for what it was. These schmendricks never saw it for what it was. They don't even know what's happening. Okay, they can't hit a curveball. These guys can hit a wiffle ball. They can't even play tennis. They wouldn't play a game like tennis with a net. They play wiffle ball with a racket. Okay, forget about it. No more catcalls, cruises, discipline, disciplining children. Where do I go from here now? I came in on a Monday. I was going to take the day off. I figured no one's listening. The lines are jammed. Everyone's listening. The lines are jammed. They're listening. These people, You know? Unbelievable. Watch out for the false messiah. Watch out for the false messiahs around you. Someone's asking for a 4th of July Vietnam movie song, Beowulf. Do we have that? Someone very dear to me. On a highway right now outside of Lake Tahoe, about to have a good time, which she is entitled to, is asking for a good 4th of July Vietnam movie song. What is that? What song would that be, Beowulf? We have one like that? A 4th of July Vietnam movie song, like what would that be? You say Vietnam movie song. I like to hear the ones with the helicopters. I like, that's one of the greatest movie combos in world movie history. Remember when the helicopters are coming in and they're playing Thus Spake Zarathustra and the machine guns are opening up on the Kong? Remember that? No, no one knows what I'm talking about. That was a great, what was that in? That was in Apocalypse Now. Right. By Francis Mortadella. What happened to him? Where'd he go? He was like a god 30 years ago. No one knows where he is. He got fat and opened the winery. Opened the winery and turned to fat. I don't blame him. He made his load. Made his wad. He made $90 million on the Pinocchio scam. Why should he work after that? Retire to Sonoma. All right. Makes the wine. I don't drink it. Overrated. It's got a nice name to it. Nothing. Cherry juice with alcohol in it, all of it. It's all the same. I can't drink this stuff anymore. Beer, vodka, that's about it. Anyway, here we are, beautiful day. The world hasn't changed. What's the song? What? Yeah, okay, well, play it. That's not the one she asked for, but play it anyway. forget it's July 4th. Remember that with the helicopter, with the gunship? I love the smell of napalm in the morning. That was a great scene. Oh, if only we had generals again. We've gone from patent to patent leather. That's what happened to the world. From patent to patent leather. Rules of engagement. Everyone's afraid of their own shadow. Yeah. All right, turn it off. What are you going to do? Yeah, all right. Accuse me of something else right now. So here we are. The world hasn't changed. We've moved into a socialized nation. And the dumb conservatives are saying that Roberts was such a genius, he outmaneuvered the liberals by voting with the liberals. You hear? I've never seen such wishful fantasy in my life. The man is a turncoat. Or he's mentally deranged because, as I said to you last week, and look, I didn't pick this out of air just to shock you. I'll repeat it again before it's lost to the ethers of the media. Roberts has epilepsy. Roberts probably takes epilepsy medication. Epilepsy medication, according to a world-famous neurologist, can cause cognitive dissonance and failures in reasoning. Okay? If you can't follow what I'm saying, then pardon me. Get out of the adult room. Either he turned on the conservative wing of the Supreme Court because of the medication he's on or because he was threatened and blackmailed. There is no other explanation for it. In fact, it just came out in an article yesterday that for 1 month he told them he was going to turn on them. One straight month they were arguing with him. They couldn't believe he was doing this to them. Either someone had this guy over a barrel, witnessed The Godfather, watched The Sopranos, maybe I watched too many movies, or the guy's a deranged turncoat. One or the other, nothing else makes sense. Or maybe all you need to know is that he was appointed by Bush, who I called a fiscal socialist. So he's from the Bush wing, that's all. He got Bush whacked by the Bush wing of the Supreme Court. But look, you want to get serious for about 60 seconds? Can you handle this attention span thing? I know it's, you know, cars, driving boats, bicycles, vacation, don't bother me. I don't care. We're going to you-know-where in a handbasket time. In my book, Trickle Up Poverty, a seminal work. See, here's the problem, what you don't understand, is that just because I write popular works doesn't mean that they're not seminal. And just because they're popular works doesn't mean that they're brilliant. See, you can write a popular work that's genius with insights that even a scholarly work cannot put down on paper for people. And that's what I specialize in. I've always had the ability to take very complex subjects and reduce them to simple terms, not simplistic terms, simple terms, because that's the mark of a good writer, is to reduce ideas to simple terms. I learned this in science writing when I was very young. Use sparse number of words. Use simple words. Don't use three-syllable words. We could use two-syllable words. You know what I'm saying? That's how you learn to write scientific language. You don't overemphasize big words just for the sake of big words. The same thing with big arguments. So I cite a case from 1939, the Schechter brothers. It's in Trickle Up Poverty. This is the precedent for what Obama just did. Forget the Commerce Clause. Obama overstepped his powers. He grabbed more power than any president has ever had. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was one of his role models, is one of his role models. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a power madman. He was very much like Stalin in terms of centralizing power in the hands of an overbearing government. Everyone knows that. In fact, in the 1930s, the centralization of power in the hands of a very few elites was commonplace in Germany, in Russia, in England, and in the United States. FDR was in line with that thinking of centralizing power. So they tried to tell these little kosher butchers in New York that they couldn't sell certain kinds of chickens, which went against their religious beliefs. They even went to jail over it. They wouldn't do it. They came out and sued the federal government, and they won. And Justice Brandeis, you may have heard of Brandeis University, is quoted in my book, Trickle Up Poverty, as having said to FDR's lieutenants the following. He said, "Let this be the end of your centralizing everything." See, in those days, a brilliant jurist can speak in plain English. Today, we have the most incompetent people in the world made into Supreme Court justices. Can anyone listening to this show tell me that Elena Kagan belongs on the Supreme Court? Can anyone listening to this show tell me anything Elena Kagan ever wrote that qualified her to be on the Supreme Court of the United States of America? And likewise,
Sotomayor, she belongs on the Supreme Court. It's as though we're living in communist China after the Mao Zedong revolution, where he took basic illiterate peasants and put them in the highest positions. These women are not qualified to be on the Supreme Court. I would not say the same thing about Justice Ginsburg. She's a brilliant jurist, although she shouldn't have been qualified to be on the Supreme Court. Why? Because she disqualified herself by having previously been the chief counsel for the anti-American ACLU. But she's a brilliant jurist. These two are not in her league. These two are Bush leaguers. That's the world we live in. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Imagine being so talented you could sing a song like that. That would be so great. Unfortunately, I am a mere talk show host. Let us see what we have here. This is an interesting story. Finally, McConnell says not easy to undo Obamacare. Oh, he figured it out? What did I tell you? It's set in stone already. All the schmendricks out there like you who believe Roberts is a genius, he did a double reverse flip, and now he's did something that's good for conservatives. You're crazy. It's wishful thinking. You're never undoing it. It's like undoing Social Security, undoing the ADA. You can't undo it. It's done. We've got Castro Care. It's over. The single biggest policy win in the history of modern American history since Johnson's Great Society. We now have a dagger through the heart of small government. It's over. The battle is over. We fought it and lost. Roberts is a turncoat. He was planted there by Bush. Either Bush knew he was like this or didn't know. It didn't matter. But Roberts was waiting in the wings, like an enemy within, to stab the American conservative movement in the heart. And so, therefore, it's over. You can't reverse this. So don't sit there with a fantasy that when we take the Senate and we take the this, we're going to overturn it. You're never overturning it. People like things for free. They love free medical care, especially those who don't work. But I'm warning you, young people don't know that the majority, 75% of the cost for Obamacare is going to fall upon people who earn less than $125,000 a year as a couple. So you young people who think that he's a great leader in this, you don't understand, you're paying for it. And the reason you young people are going to pay for Obamacare, through the nose you're going to pay, is because right now you probably wouldn't get a health plan because you don't need it. You figure, yeah, I'm healthy, I don't need it. When I was young, I didn't have it. I didn't get a health care plan until I had kids, then I worried about it. But you say, oh, I don't need it, I'll wait, it's too expensive. Well, now you can't wait. The Obama tax guys are going to come around, the IRS brown shirts are going to come around, make sure you pay or you're going to get a penalty. Why do they want you to buy a health plan? So that older people pay less. Okay, immigrants, illegal immigrants pay less or nothing, and they get treated. So you're going to carry the burden. You're going to carry the burden. All you youngsters who were hoodwinked by Obama and the Democrat machine, you're going to carry the burden. End of story. You don't have to read any more about it. You got hoodwinked once again. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What else is in the news? Yeah, you don't want to hear anymore. It's the July 4th weekend. Everyone's having a good time but me. Well, at least in D.C., they got a big break. As I said, the tree's falling, and the storms in Washington, D.C. have done more to shrink federal government than Romney could ever do. So, you know, that's about it. Where are they? Unscheduled leave for federal workers. Millions of people still without power. Can you imagine? Not even a terrorist event. Where's FEMA? They criticized Bush. Remember with Katrina? Where's FEMA today? Where's Department of Homeland Security? Where's Janet Napolitano? Everyone can't. They can't even use a printer in Washington. Where's Janet Napolitano today?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here's an amazing report on how Supreme Court Chief Justice John Turncoat Roberts switched unexpectedly against conservatives exactly the way I, Michael Savage, predicted that he had done.
What was striking about this decision was that it was the conservative Chief Justice who was providing that decisive fifth vote, joining the liberals to uphold the president's signature achievement. And Nora, that was something that no one would have expected back in 2005 when President George W. Bush put him on the Supreme Court. And that was something that not even the conservative justices expected back in March when the court heard arguments in this case. I am told by two sources with specific knowledge of the court's deliberations that Roberts initially sided with the conservatives in this case and was prepared to strike down the heart of this law, the so-called individual mandate, of course, that requires all Americans to buy insurance or pay a penalty. But Roberts, I'm told by my sources, changed his views, deciding to instead join with the liberals. And he withstood, I'm told by my sources, a month-long desperate campaign by the conservative justices to bring him back to the fold. And that campaign was led, ironically, by Justice Anthony Kennedy. And why that's ironic is because it was Justice Kennedy that conservatives feared would be the one most likely to defect. But their effort, of course, was unsuccessful. Roberts did not budge. The conservatives wrote that astonishing joint dissent, united in opposition, and Roberts wrote the majority opinion with the four liberals to uphold the president's signature achievement.
And here's the old sellout, so-called conservative Republican George Will, trying to rationalize the conservative disaster on Obamacare.
The conservative legal insurgency made two arguments, both of which were dismissed as frivolous by the liberal law school professoriate, both of which won. Both were the broccoli argument, the Tea Party argument, if you will, argument against the Commerce Clause, said if you affirm this under the Commerce Clause, you will have given the federal government a general police power to prescribe, mandate, or regulate behavior of every individual at every instance of their existence. The court did not do that. In fact, it built a fence around the Commerce Clause. On Medicaid expansion, for the first time in history, a majority of states banded together to challenge the constitutionality of legislation, and they won. For the first time since the New Deal, 75 years, the Supreme Court has overturned a federal spending statute on the grounds that, by coercing the states, it undermines the dual sovereignty that is the heart of our federal position. So for two reasons, and these reasons are going to be there, if come November there's a Romney presidency and a Republican Senate, Obamacare will be gone, the Roberts precedents will remain.
And needless to say, Nancy Pelosi is crowing about it.
They'll bring it up, and when they bring it up, they will ask for repeal. Repeal of all the things I said that help children, help young adults, help seniors, help men or women who may have prostate cancer, breast cancer, whatever it is, any precondition. And everybody will have lower rates, better quality care, and better access. So that's what they want to repeal. We're happy to have that debate. It's a penalty that comes under the tax code for the 1% perhaps of the population who may decide that they're going to be free riders. But most people are not affected by
it. But it's a new tax.
No, it's a new tax on the American people. No, no, it's not a tax on the American people. It's a tax. It's a penalty for free riders.
You don't take any responsibility for failing to adequately communicate to the American people what was in the health care bill?
Well, we certainly could have done better on that. No, we certainly could have done that.
Here's what we're covering on the Savage Nation today. Secret Service shuts down Fire Eric Holder protest, inventing an excuse that a suspicious package was found. The college students who were protesting and wanted Holder fired said there was no package, that they invented it. Department of Homeland Security is up to their old tricks of taking the side of illegal aliens, saying heat kills illegal immigrants. Conservative anger is growing over the Obamacare decision. Nonsense. What anger? The fact of the matter is, the former Bush Justice Department official, John Yoo, who is now at Berkeley as a law professor, called such silver lining analyses by conservatives hollow hope. And he said Obamacare is precisely the disaster for conservatives it appears to be. Here's what he said. The outer limit on the Commerce Clause in Sebelius does not put any other federal law in jeopardy and is undermined by its ruling on the tax power. Justice Roberts' opinion provides a constitutional roadmap for architects of the next great expansion of the welfare state. Absolutely. Absolutely. What else is on michaelsavage.com, home of the Savage Nation, where borders, language, and culture reign? Well, let's look. ATF retaliating against fast and furious whistleblowers. Chinese stink bugs ruining U.S. fruit crops. These stink bugs bruise fruit with a simple and initially undetectable bite. Sounds like liberals. Have you yet bought the book, Trickle Down Tyranny? Everything you need to know about Obama and what he's going to do is in there. FBI ignored illegals' crimes until he killed again. Yep, Ramos. Muslims kill 15 in an attack at a Kenyan church. Not a word from the UN. News Corp split ads to pressure on papers. Decorated war veteran killed by his own soldier. Yep, killed by his own soldier. Not in combat, but shot in the back. And here's one for the books. Border agents are being told to run away and hide from gunmen. The bosses are telling them to run and hide when illegal aliens come at them with guns. This is the world under Obama, taking the side of gangs from Mexico. From England, Muslim men are preying on white girls in sex grooming rings. The only reason this story broke open is because a Muslim prosecutor dared do it. He said fear of the political backlash, in other words, cowardice, in other words, liberal political correctness, prevented this story from breaking. It's been going on in England. Muslim men preying on white girls in sex grooming rings. High-pressure heat dome causing extreme temperatures. Evil lawyers try to delay the trial of the Fort Hood killer yet again. How's socialized medicine working out in England? How do you like rationing and hospital closures? How would you like to be treated in the hallway of a hospital? Roberts switched positions on Obamacare. That's right. He turned coat, just as I told you. It was no brilliant strategy. He went with the liberals to be loved. Savage wrote, Roberts may be affected by mind-altering drugs. Got a lot of attention. I don't know. Maybe I'm right. Islamists loot and destroy World Heritage sites. They're destroying tombs and wrecking the country. Isn't diversity grand? Why hasn't he been indicted? Who protects him? A gay rights advocate, he has a name, Larry Brinken, who was arrested last Friday on suspicion of possessing child pornography, has not yet been indicted. He was arrested and released. Let me ask you something. How come you think he's not been indicted yet? You think someone's protecting him? Where's the FBI? Savage says to Romney, be Scott Walker. All this and more on michaelsavage.com. Obama's socialist designs. Texas student mauled by chimps. Teens riot and attack nearly kill lifeguards at a swimming pool in Brooklyn, renovated for $50 million to show how good the mayor was for minorities. A melee occurred the day they reopened the pool and they almost killed a lifeguard. Isn't diversity grand? Finally, Madoff's brother pleads guilty in a Ponzi scheme. That's right. All this and more right here on the Savage Nation. Wait, hang on before I go. You know, I hate seeing my electric meter spinning around like some crazed hamster wheel. Running the AC is like watching dollar bills fly out of poorly insulated windows. It costs thousands to replace windows, but for a fraction of the cost, you can put gorgeous energy-saving solar shades over your windows from Blinds.com. Blinds.com saves my listeners and me in so many ways. They offer a huge selection of designer blinds, shades, shutters, and drapes at prices lower than Lowe's and Home Depot by posting free online how-to videos that make transforming any room in about 20 minutes very easy and by yourself. Listen, by making measuring so utterly goof-proof that even if you mismeasure, which is next to impossible, they'll remake it for free. Get free color samples, free shipping, no sales tax in most states, plus expert installers if you need one. Save an extra 20% on top brands through July 31st at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, where prices absolutely crush home improvement stores. Don't be blind. Go to Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Did you get it? Blinds.com. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I found a few other stories. I don't want to really get you down today, but I guess some of you are down already. They picked someone for the National Labor Relations Board that, according to Fox News, is tied to the mobs and corruption. A mob lawyer was put on the National Labor Relations Board. This union was indicted, many of their members thrown in prison by Chris Christie when he was a U.S. attorney in the area. And here this administration, this corrupt gangster administration, there's no other words for it. Obama pick for NLRB was top lawyer for union, tainted by mob ties and history of corruption. What amazes me about all of this is how anyone could vote for a Democrat, especially a Democrat machine as corrupt as this one. I could see if you're getting the grift from it. I could see if you're getting the vigorish from it. I could see if you're on welfare. I could see if you're getting benefits from the administration. How could any working person vote for this corrupt administration when it is so flagrantly corrupt? I'll never understand. And that brings me back to Romney. I came to a very sad conclusion. You want to hear what that conclusion is? Because we've all been wondering, why is Romney so weak? Why is Romney so milquetoast? Why is Romney so compliant? Why is Romney so, well, just so Romney-like? And you know what occurred to me? It's not that there's anything wrong with Romney. It's not that Romney's a bad man. Romney's a clean man. He's a good man. I believe that the corruption and the evil that has seized this nation under this administration is so overwhelming and so deeply wired that it's almost impossible to overturn. And I believe Romney knows that. I believe that Romney understands how corrupt they are, how evil they are, and how almost impossible it is to overturn this evil and corruption. And I believe that in his heart of hearts, he'd like to. But even he knows it's almost impossible. I want to direct you to three articles I posted on MichaelSavage.com. The top one is from the Washington Times, Obama's Socialist Designs. The next one is Obama opens the White House to gay vandals. You've got to see these pictures. Obama invited gay radicals into the White House, and they posed for pictures underneath Ronald Reagan, giving the middle finger at Ronald Reagan. If this doesn't symbolize the gang, the degeneracy of this administration, what does? The fact that they picked the mob lawyer for the NLRB, the fact that Hillary Clinton joked about pantsuits and threw in the words U.S. Constitution as an afterthought as she swore in another stooge in the State Department. So let me begin with the first article. You can call me at 1-800-449-8255. Don't know what you'd like to talk about, but I'm open to any topic. I want to read you the first article because it's so well written. Normally, I don't like to read articles. It was written by a gentleman who fills in for me, Jeff Kuhner, who writes for the Washington Times. He's a history professor, so therefore he's an educated man as opposed to most in the media. And he writes this. President Obama is gradually transforming America into a socialist authoritarian state. This is the real meaning of his recent decision to grant backdoor amnesty to young illegal immigrants. Mr. Obama is behaving like a Latin American strongman who asserts arbitrary power and ignores the rule of law. He is assaulting the very pillars of our constitutional republic. Last week, the administration announced that it will stop deporting young illegal aliens. The policy shift affects as many as 800,000 illegal immigrants. Pause. Today we learned from Luis Gutierrez that it's at least 1.2 million. I'll continue. Mr. Obama's order lifts the fear of deportation. It also grants them work permits. Mr. Obama has waved his magic wand and converted the immigration status of countless aliens, flipping them from illegal to legal residents. The order applies to those who entered America before the age of 16 and so forth and so on. And then he goes on. The policy change is a blatant attempt to bribe the Hispanic vote prior to the November election, a key constituency Obama must win. Let me pause there. You're looking at bribery. You're looking at the violation of the Constitution. You're looking at bribery. I'll go on. Yet the order is more than crass partisan politics. It is an ominous usurpation of centralized power, a naked attempt to entrench an imperial presidency. Obama lacks the legal authority to grant amnesty. He is not a monarch or a tyrant with unlimited discretionary authority. Rather, he is confined by our constitutional system of the separation of powers and checks and balances. The Constitution is crystal clear. Congress has the sole power to craft immigration policy. Obama's actions are flagrantly anti-democratic. His goal is simple: to destroy the American nation. For decades, our supposed betters have encouraged open borders and unlimited third world immigration. Corporatist Republicans seek to import cheap labor. Liberal Democrats want to import millions of potential voters. The middle and working class, however, have been decimated. Their wages have eroded. Crime has skyrocketed. Border states in the South are overwhelmed. And hospitals, schools, and welfare services have been strained to the breaking point. Illegal immigration is slowly bankrupting America. Now Mr. Obama has established a magnet for millions more to come. Aliens know they can wait out Uncle Sam. Eventually, amnesty will be granted. U.S. national sovereignty, the rule of law, and our constitutional republic are being sacrificed on the altar of multiculturalism and the creation of a Democrat-ruled one-party state. The administration has whetted the insatiable appetite of leftist Hispanic activists. The logic is inexorable. If a path to legalization can be paved for young illegal immigrants, then why not all 12 million to 20 million aliens in America? Mr. Obama clearly hopes to galvanize the Hispanic community and to build a permanent liberal ruling coalition by massively expanding the Democratic base. Today it is piecemeal amnesty. Tomorrow it will be wholesale legalization. The American electorate will be transformed, thereby entrenching Obamaism for decades to come. In short, Mr. Obama is slowly erecting a leftist state.
Savage.
It seems to me the media has gone to sleep on the socialized Obamacare ruling now that Judge Roberts threw his weight behind the enemy. There are even a few on the so-called conservative side who are attempting to justify Roberts' actions. I mean, they're a laughingstock. Everybody knows that these conservatives are completely and totally wrong, creating a fake idea that it was good for us. Charles Krauthammer, George Will, completely discredited because they argued the Obamacare decision was actually a victory for conservatives because it placed a limit on expansive interpretations of the Constitution's Commerce Clause. Total BS. I've always known Will and Krauthammer to be Democrats. That's why they're often on Fox News, and I'm not. Oh, joining us now on the Savage Nation is a senior fellow in constitutional studies at the Cato Institute, Ilya Shapiro, who says this ruling brings together two of the worst types of constitutional jurisprudence, liberal activism and conservative pacifism. Amen. Ilya Shapiro, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, I'm sure you see this ruling for what it is, a disaster.
Well, it was odd. I'm happy that I was one of the few commentators that didn't prepare press releases or op-eds for the potential scenarios, because nobody predicted that this was going to happen. That is, that we, the challengers, would get everything we wanted out of the court in terms of the scope of Congress's power to regulate interstate commerce and the necessary and proper clause, and even the spending clause, the Medicaid expansion. The states were arguing successfully, it turned out, that the expansion of Medicare being foisted on them was coercive, unconstitutionally so. And yet we still lost the case, or the mandate is still in place. Obamacare is still in place on a really thinly argued taxing power analysis that I'm frankly still scratching my head about. It's clear that Roberts posed a challenge for himself to uphold the legislation without expanding federal power under the Commerce Clause. And he kind of squared that circle, not successfully to my mind, by invoking the taxing power, although it didn't seem to convince anyone. And as we've gone along now, several days since the opinion, And of course, recently it came out that he changed his mind and he was thinking about other things, that this was a political rather than a legal or a constitutional opinion by the Chief Justice. You know, the other justices seem to be more principled, legally speaking. The liberal four don't see any limits on federal power. That's their principled legal position. The other four, which are now the joint dissenters, see very strict limits and would have struck down the entire legislation because there's no way to separate out the heart of it, the core, the mandate and the Medicaid expansion. But Roberts is the only one that seemed to think that it was important for his legacy or the court's institutional standing or some other sort of consideration like this to leave the law standing in some way. I don't think this was a political decision in the sense of being partisan or in the sense of succumbing to op-eds by media commentators or even speeches by the president or the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Pat Leahy. That could be, but I think more it's just his understanding or conception of the place of the court in American life, and he decided to punt this back to the American people, back to the political branches, and that's unfortunate. Because judges are supposed to apply the law and apply the Constitution, regardless of what their theories are, we can disagree with them, but without regard to political calculus. And I think he thought that he was being more modest or restrained. But ironically, as the joint dissent points out, he rewrote the law a couple of times and he strained to make this decision. And rather than being immodest, effectively was an activist, or as I put it in my article, a pacifist, because really what this decision is, the majority, the five-justice majority upholding the mandate and Obamacare generally, was an unholy alliance, if you will, of liberal activism and conservative pacifism. That is, the reaction to the liberal excesses of the 60s and 70s by the conservative establishment was to say, no, we need judges not striking down laws, just defer to what state legislators and Congress do. Let the people decide. This isn't for unelected judges in black robes to decide. And well, that sort of reasoning came back to bite many conservatives in this case, because this is what he was doing. He was deferring. He was trying to let the political branches sort it out, where what he really should have been doing is not being concerned with activism or modesty or restraint or any of these sorts of things, which really are charges levied by someone who disagrees with whatever opinion is being released. What he should have been doing, what all judges should do, is come up with their conception of the Constitution and apply it, regardless of whether a given law is upheld or is struck down. Now, my theory of the Constitution, I think, is a Madisonian one involving limited enumerated powers that, in this case, Congress clearly went beyond. And that's why I think the correct ruling would have been to strike the entire thing down. So, you know, even in the Medicaid example, for example, even in the Medicaid a part of the decision, Roberts rewrote the opinion to uphold rather than a forced Medicaid transformation because the states couldn't lose all of the federal funds that were at stake. Now it's an opt out or an opt in. That is, they can choose to receive the new federal funding if they're willing to bear the new regulations. But you know, that's a ticket good for this. What he rewrote the law to be is as a hypothetical law that Congress didn't even pass and might not have passed, because it probably doesn't. The whole national legislation probably doesn't work with this patchwork of opt-ins and what have you. So at the end of the day, we're left with a judge, the Chief Justice, no less, who decided that it was more important for various extra constitutional reasons to uphold this law rather than to be faithful to even the view of the Constitution that he probably holds. He thought that being a judge meant not striking down legislation. Well, to my mind, being a judge means judging.
So his so-called restraint has actually created a bigger problem, right?
Absolutely. This is a Frankenstein's monster. As I said, when you put together the conservative deference, the pacifism with the liberal activism that sees the government as not having any limits on it, you create this sort of hybrid that is neither here nor there. It's the poisonous fruit of this weird tree, but it's not constitutional law.
Well, what's next?
Well, I think this is the end of the road for the individual mandate and for the Medicaid expansion, but there are other lawsuits that were pending, that were stayed, awaiting the result of this decision. Those continue. For example, most recently, the Catholic bishops' challenge against the contraception mandate, or my friends at the Goldwater Institute in Arizona have a very strong challenge to the Independent Payment Advisory Board, IPAB, that is this kind of completely independent agency that's going to be deciding on what Medicare reimburses, what payments are, what procedures are worthwhile, et cetera. And there are others. And there are others now going to be filed, given that the Supreme Court has laid out how Obamacare works, what parts of it survive, maybe even a challenge to the taxing power, to the this really weird, voluntary, I like to say, unicorn-like tax that's never been seen before under the Constitution. This choice that you now have, apparently, between buying insurance and or being taxed. I mean, when you think about it, really, that's like saying, well, the government can't make you buy broccoli, to invoke that famous hypothetical, but it can tax you if you don't buy broccoli. That's a distinction without a difference. So, yeah, the litigation, the cases will continue. I wouldn't be surprised if some more Obamacare cases start reaching the Supreme Court in a couple of years. But the direct challenge to the mandate is done, and it's now thrown to the American people to decide what kind of presidents and senators who will confirm the judges that the presidents appoint they want to elect this fall.
What can we, the people, do?
Well, it took us decades to get here to a very expansive federal government power, and it'll take decades to get back. But it's a matter of education. You know, the Tea Parties have a lot of rallies this coming Wednesday. I'm going to be speaking about one of the Federalist Papers to the Alexandria Tea Party. But it's about learning about how the Constitution works and demanding of elected officials that they appoint judges and confirm judges, and indeed at the state level voting for judges that are going to be faithful to our founding document and to making sure that government is checked and ultimately to protect individual liberty.
What can we expect to see in the next few years?
Well, it could be repealed depending on the results of the election, and it seems like because it's a tax, this is really getting into the arcane of Senate procedural rules, but because it's a tax, apparently they only need 50 votes to repeal it, rather than the normal 60 to survive a potential filibuster. But that's about it, with Obamacare specifically. But, you know, I think Congress is now going to be, on notice that there's going to be a challenge popularly. The people, American citizens, are demanding there to be limits on federal power, not just disagreeing with policies. So that's a good thing. This discussion that we've had, this whole litigation the last 2+ years, it's resulted not just in these new limitations via the spending clause and the commerce clause, but it's really energized the populace to demand more and to see Obamacare as well as many other potential laws as unwelcome and beyond federal power.
Where can we read more?
Well, sure. Cato's website is cato.org, and you can look me up there. I'm one of the experts listed there. At least I play an expert on TV and for radio. But I'm publishing constantly on that. I just put up a blog post this morning analyzing Roberts as a political actor. And I have essays on SCOTUS blog, but all my colleagues do, and whether it be constitutional law, healthcare policy, or anything else, we try to be faithful to our view of limited government and free markets and individual liberty, and let the chips fall where they may.
Ilya Shapiro, thanks for being with us on The Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
This is an out-of-control presidency. It is criminal. It is corrupt.
Or brought here on slave ships.
Oh, God help me.
Whether they signed in at Ellis Island or they crossed the Rio Grande, their diversity has not only enriched this country, it helped build the greatest economic engine the world has ever known. Hungry.
So you see, to Obama, whether you came here legally or illegally, whether you came through Ellis Island or swam across the Rio Grande, whether you waited in line or jumped the line, makes no difference. Because to Obama and Eric Withholder,
there is nothing but parity in all acts and in all people. That's multiculturalism. That's affirmative action. That's plain stupid. Now let's go to the callers. 1-800-449-8255. You're welcome to call on any of the issues that I mentioned. The article is great. There are many, many others. Germany kicked Greece out of the euro. It just happened minutes ago. Germany kicked Greece out of the euro. That's interesting. Greece didn't elect to go out of the euro? Did they? No. I don't mean the dollar euro. I mean the ball game euro. I walked around San Francisco, and every bar I went to, I saw idiots staring at screens. Young people. Idiots who will vote. They were obsessed. Obsessed with the soccer game on the screen. And I said, we have become Uruguay. America has finally become Uruguay. We already had a large mass of idiots who were interested in baseball and football. Now, with massive immigration from third world countries, we have a large majority of people who are interested only in some ball bouncing around in front of their eyes. Now, I say to each his own, but it's because of this obsession with sports that we have such a poor political class. Nevertheless, that's my opinion. I'm from another generation. And if you care to comment on my comments, please call another show and save it for them, because I'm not interested in what you think of me. I'd rather talk about the news. And we are open to any topic that is in the news, including Hillary Clinton joking about the U.S. Constitution as an afterthought while talking about her pantsuits and swearing in a stooge in the State Department. Let us begin in Houston, Texas. Brandon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. I tell you one thing. I'm just so disgusted every day when I listen and I look at the plan of attack that Romney's taken against Obama and the administration. I mean, I don't think that Obama and Eric Holder and them could be giving us more of a reason or things to look at and point out every day and just go full blast to the American public at how bad these people are and how bad they're screwing up this country. But the more and more I look at Mitt Romney and try to see how he could be better, he doesn't seem like he can stand up to Obama and tell the American
public. Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem. I think that the corruption and evil is so powerful. I believe that the gang that has taken over America is so evil and so dangerous that the Republicans are cowering from them. That's the utter reality of what I've come to conclude. And frankly, it frightens me and it sickens me. I don't believe that there is an opposition party anymore. I believe they've been nullified. I believe they've been gelded. I believe they've been bought and sold and told, shut your mouth, dummy up, and we'll make sure that you get a little bit of what's left in the Treasury every year. Just keep your mouth shut, keep your nose clean, and let us rape and pillage any way we wish. Don't make much of a fuss about anything. Make an occasional fuss, and we'll let you get away with it. Otherwise, well, we're just going to take care of you the way we take care of various and sundry things in this country. Just remember Marcy Park. Just remember all of the good things that happened in this country when the Clintons ran this country. I have a fear that that's what they've done to every Republican in this country. There's no other explanation for this level of corruption, evil, and criminality to go unnoticed and unpunished. And of course, since there's no opposition party, in my opinion, because they've been either threatened, I have a feeling they've been threatened with a Marcy Park job. There's no other explanation for it. I believe that the gang that seized control of America is so ruthless and so dangerous that the Republicans have been threatened into submission. There's no other explanation. How do you explain it? Jimmy in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR.
I think the Republicans, by and large, are not too well informed and maybe are a little bit afraid to say what some of them might start thinking. But I wanted to say that with your beginning of the show, talking about the socialist and Marxist movement to make world government, you know, the communist press, even going back to Lenin and Stalin, talked about it. They didn't even hide it. They called it the New World Order. They talked about having a world economic system, and that's going to make it easier to get world government. And in the early 50s, the U.S. government did a study of the tax-exempt foundation. It was known as the Rees Committee report on the tax-exempt foundations, and a couple of hundred pages of proof showing Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and Carnegie are all working to merge America into a world government. So you have.
Well, let's pause right here for a minute, because I don't want to just knee-jerk agree with you or laugh at you. We know it's true, but, you know, Jimmy, let's be objective about this for a moment. With international trade, with international internet information sharing, isn't there already a world government?
Well, it's the beginning of it, but they're going to tighten it and tighten it and tighten it till it becomes a world dictatorship.
So what is it that the average American should fear about the emerging mega world government run by who? Some bureaucrats in the UN? Is that basically what they want? They want to erase national sovereignty. They want to equal everyone's pay around the world where we're all serfs. Is that it?
Yes, something like that. Each country will become basically a state, whereas we have all the states we have now, and then we have the federal government. Every country will become a state in the world federal government. In other words, we as voters in New York or in California, wherever we are not going to have much say in the world government. It's sort of
do
like...
Do we have much say right now? We have many dictators like Jerry Brown in California who is put in there by the unions, who does what he wants and gets away with it because he owns the entire press. So tell me why there's a difference in a new world order than that we have already from the corruption that we have. For example, in New York State, Governor Cuomo. Governor Cuomo just quelled the reportage of teachers' ratings in New York State. He, with the stroke of a pen, said, no, you cannot see the ratings of teachers because the unions don't want anyone to see how bad the teachers are. So we have dictatorships across 50 states already. What difference would it make if they're from Nairobi or from Beijing? We have the dictators in Albany and in Sacramento.